until I gave him a small nod and he followed the others out. She waited until the footsteps faded before she stood, her arms crossed over her chest.
"So," she said, "is that real?"
I knew what she was asking, and I knew why she was asking it.
I would too, in her position.
"Yes," I said, "it is."
"Pretty trouble," she said. "I warned you of that once."
"Yes, well, Rain was definitely trouble. Even now, I couldn't deny that. But maybe he was the kind of trouble I needed. Right now, he was the kind of trouble all my people needed. I should have had a very diplomatic, queenly response for her. Instead, I just said, "Sometimes we need a little trouble to get shit done." A short laugh.
"Perhaps."
That smile faded, her face going steely.
"You have my full loyalty and respect, Highness, even if your decisions are not the ones I would make. In light of recent events, I want to make that clear."
After seeing the way Rain's people had rebelled against him, I was so grateful for this, I could have hugged her. Yes, I knew this loyalty was born of nothing but my relation to Vincent, complicated as it may be. But loyalty, no matter the source, was more precious than gold.
"I wanted to speak to you too," I said, "about something that Septimus has been working on."
She listened as I told her about Septimus's claims of the existence of Godblood in the House of Night, and his claims that Vincent had known and perhaps even harnessed it. I told her about the pendant I had recovered from Lahore, and the unfortunate fact that it was likely now in Septimus's clutches. With every sentence, her brows rose slightly higher, the only change in her expression.
"Do you think this could be real?" I said. "Did Vincent tell you about it?"
Because surely, if he was going to entrust knowledge of a secret, powerful weapon to anyone, it would have been Jasmine, his head of war. Right? But she was quiet, a regretful expression passing over her features, like a distant reflection over glass.
"Your father," she said finally, "was a very secretive man."
I wasn't expecting this shade to her voice, sad and a little vulnerable.
"But he trusted you," I said. "Didn't he?"
She laughed, short and humorless.
"Trusted me? Yes, perhaps, as much as he trusted anyone."
I was confused by this. Because when he was alive, I had envied Jasmine and Vincent's closest advisors. I had envied them because they had a level of respect from him that I thought was beyond my reach. At least until I won the Qajari and bound myself to him, matching his strength with a Coriatis bond. My confusion must have shown on my face, because her brow quirked.
"This surprises you."
I always thought that you two had a... I wasn't sure how to word it.
"You thought because I was his head of war, and because he was fucking me, he told me things."
I wasn't going to put it that way exactly, but... "Well, yes," I said. A pained flinch, there and gone again in less than a second.
"Me too," she said, "for a while."
The tone in her voice was so uncomfortably familiar. I'd always assumed she'd gotten some part of him I never could. Not the sex, of course, but the trust. It had never occurred to me that she was chasing him too. Hell, it had never even occurred to me that she had even cared enough to want that intimacy from him. The question slipped out before I could stop it. "Did you love him, Jasmine?" I half expected her to laugh at me for asking. It seemed like far too personal a question. But instead, she seemed to actually consider this.
"I loved him as my king," she said at last. "And perhaps I could have loved him as a man too. I did in some ways. Maybe I wanted to in more. But he could not have loved me."
"Why?" I wanted to ask. Because Jasmine seemed like the epitome of everything a man like Vincent should love. Beautiful, brilliant, deadly, powerful. If he had ever chosen to marry, I couldn't have imagined a better match for him.
A tight smile flitted across her lips.
Loving someone else is a dangerous thing, she said. Even for vampires. More dangerous still for a king. Vincent knew that. He was never going to open himself up to more weakness, and he already had exposed himself enough with the love he had for you.
The words struck deep, and I wasn't prepared. My jaw tightened. A raging monsoon of emotions knotted in my chest, all of them contradictory. I so desperately craved to hear that Vincent had loved me. And yet, I was so angry to hear it too. Yes, maybe he had loved me, but he had still lied to me. He had still isolated me. He had still hurt me. Maybe he had loved me. Maybe I got what Jasmine wanted and never could have. Was I supposed to be grateful for that alone? What if I couldn't be? I just said, well, you said it. He was a secretive man. Jasmine nodded slowly in a way that said, shamefully, she understood. Then she cleared her throat.
So no, she said. He never talked to me about this godblood. But that doesn't mean he didn't have it. On the contrary, I think it seems like exactly the sort of thing he would do. If it existed, he would have found it.
If that's true, I said, then I sure as hell hope he hid it well. Somewhere Septimus and Simon can't find it. Even if the pendant... I winced, as I did every time I thought of that damned pendant, cursing myself for ever letting it leave my sight. Jasmine's lips thinned, clearly imagining all the same terrible scenarios that I was. Defeating Septimus and Simon would already be a challenge. If they had any surprises for us, we would be fucked.
Vincent was a very cautious person, she said, especially when it came to weapons.
If he had it, he never would have left it accessible by a single key, no matter how well hidden that key was. And even still, I think he would have multiple fail-safes, split it into multiple locations, for example. Goddess, I hoped so. At this point, I wasn't even holding out hope of finding this godblood, if it existed, myself. I just wanted to make sure Septimus didn't have it. Here's hoping he hid it well, I muttered. And Jasmine laughed bitterly.
Men and their secrets, she said. We spend a lifetime trying to unravel them, and once they're gone, we're still at their mercy.
Yes.
Better hope Vincent hid his well.
In fucking deed.
Chapter 51. Rain. I could not fucking wait for a bath. It was hard to play the convincing role of the confident Rishan King to a bunch of my greatest enemies while coated in two-week-old shit. Jasmine's second, a straight-backed, wary-eyed woman who looked like she was debating whether to stab us with every step, showed us to the springs. It was amazing that such a thing could exist out here in the desert. I had to admit that the House of Night, for all its many faults, was a place of great natural wonder. The springs were located deep in the tunnels, where the dry air turned damp and steamy. The water was a perfect teal blue, illuminated by shocks of bright light running up the cave walls, which seemed far too beautiful to just be minerals and algae. The caves separated down here, running into many little offshoots. Convenient for privacy, which I think everyone was glad for after so much non-stop travel together. Well, Misha sighed the moment our guide left us. This is amazing. She stretched out her arms as if already imagining diving in. I watched her out of the corner of my eye. I knew Misha, and I knew that something had been wrong since we left Sivrnage. Hell, I could tell from the moment I saw her in the dungeons, those big eyes practically bursting with tears. Not a hint of those, of course, during the journey. It would be easy to mistake Misha's outgoing attitude for emotional openness. She may be chatty, but she was damned good at hiding all the things that mattered. Aurea had told me about the Shadowborn Prince, that Misha had been the one to kill him. It was a diplomatic headache, but one I could put off dealing with for a while. I was more concerned about what Aurea didn't tell me. And I knew there was something. her stilted, "You should talk to Misha when you can," said that well enough. But Misha made sure I never got that chance. We had been moving so fast that I'd barely gotten a private moment with her since we fled, and every time I tried, in our rare moments of rest, to speak to her alone, she'd run off with some harried, half-baked excuse. Now I turned to her. "Misha, before you go."
"Later,"
she said, without so much as looking at me. "Bath now." And she was gone into one of the caves before I had time to argue with her. I wished I could say I was surprised. Keturah and Lilith excused themselves immediately too, clearly just as eager to wash themselves off. Vale, though, lingered for a long, awkward moment as I gathered the clothes our guide had brought. I peered over my shoulder. "If your goal is to make this as uncomfortable as possible," I said, "you've achieved it." Vale's jaw tightened. He still said nothing, still didn't move either. Amazing. The man's wife was off naked in some hot water after a week of travel and zero privacy, and he was still standing here. I dreaded to think what this would be about. "What, Vale?" "I wanted to..." His gaze slipped away, examining an apparently fascinating pile of rocks. "I appreciate the rescue." So this was what a noble looked like when they had to say thank you. "You're more useful to me out here than you are in there," I said, hoping this was the end of that conversation. But he still lingered. His eyes snapped back to me. "I'm no fool. I know that you must have wondered. But if you need confirmation of where my loyalties lie, I hope finding my wife in that prison cell gave them to you." Ah, now I understood. I straightened and turned to him, Vale's chin raised slightly, all traces of his earlier uncertainty now gone. Even covered in shit, he was every bit the Nightborn noble. Sometimes vampires' agelessness seemed like a cruel joke. 200 years had passed since my time under Neculi's control, and yet I looked the same, and Vale looked the same. Every time I looked at him, I saw him as he was then. I saw him just watching as it all happened. Maybe if he'd had lines to his face or gray hair or aging eyes, I might have found it easier to forget that this was the same person. But there he was, Vale, one of Neculi's nobles. And yet I knew that what he was telling me was the truth. I'd known it from the moment I opened Lilith's cell door and saw him run to her. If Vale had remained loyal in the face of threats against her, that was true loyalty. I gave him a rueful half-smile. "You can't blame a man for wondering." He pursed his lips. "No, I can't. What you said before the wedding was the truth." I didn't show my surprise, but it struck me anyway. Even as a king, I never thought I'd hear anything even close to "you're right" from Vale. "Things are..." His gaze momentarily flicked down the path Lilith had followed before returning to me. "Things are different than they were. In those days, I was more committed to the House of Night than I was to anything. It was the only love I knew. I let it define me. And that meant letting Neculi define me. I did not question the things he did, or the way he treated those beneath him. What my king said was truth. And when he treated his turned slaves as possessions, I didn't question that, even if I didn't agree with it. It was harder than I wished it was to hear this. I didn't like addressing that time directly, not ever, but especially not with Vale of all people. It just made me painfully conscious of everything he had seen. "And to be clear," he went on, "I didn't agree with it. Not then, not now. But you were right. Not agreeing was not enough. I was complacent. And if it had been Lilith, it never will be," I said. He inclined his chin. "I know that as long as you are king, it never will be." "As long as you are king." We both knew neither of us could say the same for Simon or Septimus. I'd never thought of Vale as the romantic type. Back in Nekulai's court, he had been just like all the others, maybe not as abusive, but just as power-hungry. Even when I'd called on him to fight for me, I'd figured it would be his pride and ambition alone that brought him back. 200 years ago, his vision for the House of Night had been simplistic in the way all vampire aspirations were. Be bigger, be stronger, and above all, be more powerful. Maybe now he was looking for something more. Maybe he had found it. It didn't make me forget who he had once been, but it made me respect the person he had become a little bit more. And perhaps that was why I found myself saying something a little dangerous to him. Something that undermined the image I presented even to my most trusted inner circle. Any kingdom that Aurea rules, I said carefully, would also be safe for Lilith. If it comes to that. Vale stiffened, and I briefly wondered if I'd made a mistake by saying this. Hundreds of years had cemented his hate for the Hyage. But maybe people could indeed change. Because God has helped me, Vale's face did soften with reluctant understanding. If it comes to that, I said again. The message clear. If I die and you want this kingdom to be what you dream it could be, then support her. Vale nodded. I understand, he said. And then he bowed. Not just a little polite one, like he had often given me since arriving here. A deep bow, one that lingered for several seconds, offering true fealty. Not for any audience, just for us. A strange feeling came over me at this sight, a weight on my shoulders, heavy and dizzying. He straightened. We regarded each other for a few awkward seconds, as if both readjusting to this freshly reestablished power dynamic. Being a king was bizarre. If that's all, I said, I'd like to go wash the sewage off of myself. Vale almost smiled, almost. Likewise. I found a secluded offshoot in the caves and stripped down. My clothes practically cracked when I peeled them off, leaving flakes of dried up, goddess knew what, on the damp stone ground. These leathers were a backup set from my apartment in the human districts, and they fit poorly, too tight around my shoulders and chafing at my wings during all the flying. I let out a borderline sexual groan of pleasure to get them off my body. There was nothing borderline about the noise I made when I walked into that pool, though. Ix's fucking tits. Paradise did exist, and it was here. The water was still and hot and clear. It didn't even smell, not even a little. Amazing. I conjured my wings and stretched them out in the water, lowering myself to submerge them completely, flexing the weary muscles. Then I dunked my head under the surface and remained there, submerged in blissful warm darkness until my lungs started to ache. When I came up again, I was aware of her immediately. That smell, steel and night fire, and a hint of spring. I didn't even have to turn around. Enjoying the view, princess?
Chapter 52 Aurea. I'll admit it. I had been staring. It was impossible not to. He looked like a mother-damned painting, standing there with that uncannily teal water pooled around his waist, the blue algae glow settling into every line of his form, tinting his wings with yet another shade in their already endless complexity. And then, of course, there was his air mark, glowing red in the darkness. The whorls of shadowy strokes stretching across the muscled expanse of his back, trailing down his spine all the way into the water. I hadn't looked at that air mark closely since the night of the final trial. I found it almost as striking now as I had then, though in a very different way. He turned and glanced at me over his shoulder, one eyebrow quirked. Water's fantastic. I just said, turn around.
He paused before obeying.
There are other caves, he said, if you want privacy.
Respectfully, he understood that just because he'd seen me naked before didn't mean he was entitled to see me again. But I stripped off my rancid leathers, leaving them in a heap beside his. It was so comfortably warm down here, just hot enough to raise a sheen of sweat to my skin, and yet it still felt fresh and clean and comfortable. And the water itself? Goddess, when I stepped into it, I practically moaned. He chuckled.
I made that sound, too.
Still, he kept his back turned. I dunked my head under the water, swimming submerged for a few strokes before surfacing again near Rain. The water here was up to his waist and my ribcage. His hair clung in wet whirls to his upper back, water purling into beads on his tan skin. I found myself struck by the scent of him. He'd always had a distinctive smell, but lately, even beneath the disgusting scent of grime, it had gotten overwhelming to me. A constant, lingering awareness whenever he was in my proximity. I'd chalked that up to the fact that we all probably smelled something fierce while traveling, though I'd never noticed anyone else's scent like Rain's. But even with the sweat and sewage washed away, it was just as strong. The sky in the desert, even when submerged in water. Was this, I wondered, what vampires felt like all the time? This aware? My eyes fell to his air mark. The red ink pulsed with the slow, steady beat of his heart, faint wisps of red smoke rolling from each stroke. The scarred flesh beneath it was raised and rough, though the lines of the mark were smooth and clear. Once he'd claimed his power from Nyaxia, nothing could have kept that mark hidden. I couldn't even imagine how badly he must have burned himself all those years ago to hide it to begin with. The mark stretched across his back, all the phases of the moon rendered in delicate brushstrokes, framed by spirals of smoke. The spear traveled down his spine, fitting perfectly between his wings, down to the dimpled small of his back. Until now, I hadn't realized just how similar his mark was to mine. The arrangement was different, but we both had the smoke, the moons, the same elegant red strokes. Strange that these marks supposedly branded us as innate enemies, and yet they were obvious mates to each other. My fingertips traced the lines, following them across his upper back, around his wings, down his spine. I couldn't help but wince a little at the rough texture of the scar beneath them. Mother, that must have been terrible. His shoulders stilled for a moment at my touch.
What do you think?
He said.
Suit me. I don't actually get to look at it too often.
His voice was flippant, and yet I heard what lingered beneath it, knew that there was nothing flippant about Rain's feelings towards this mark. It's beautiful. He scoffed slightly. You don't like it, I said. Not a question, it was true. He glanced over his shoulder again, giving me a glimpse of his profile before turning ahead.
You're too perceptive for someone with such bad people skills.
Then, after a moment,
it reminds me too much of him. Doesn't seem fair sometimes for him to have marked me this permanently. I don't want anything of his on me.
It's not his. It's yours. My fingertips ran up his spine again, this time following the swirls of smoky red. I had never met Neculi, never seen his mark, but I couldn't imagine this one on anyone other than Rain. Every small detail of it seemed crafted to complement his body. The flow of his muscles, the shape of his form, even bending and reforming around his scars. Your skin, I murmured, pushing aside tendrils of wet hair to follow the strokes near his neck. Your body. Your mark. He didn't say anything for a long moment. I was very conscious of the way goosebumps rose on his flesh beneath the trail of my touch.
May I turn around, princess?
He asked. The tone was teasing. The question was real. The corner of my mouth twitched. Queen, remember? I could hear the smile.
Of course, my queen.
The my made it something more than a joke. I'll allow it, I said. He turned. His gaze drank me in slowly, starting at my hair, my eyes, my face, and then trailing down over my shoulders, lingering at my breasts, peaked and wet, exposed above the water that pooled around my ribcage. But he lifted his eyes to my mark, over my throat, shoulders, and chest. He reached out to touch it, his fingertip tracing the lines just as mine had done to his. I wanted to hide the way it made my skin pebble, made my breath grow a little uneven. His eyes were heavy-lidded, unblinking. With the blue reflection of the water and the algae, they looked almost purple.
"Can't imagine it looked this good on Vincent,"
he murmured. I wondered if he was seeing the same thing in my mark that I had just seen in his, all the ways it complemented my specific form. I hadn't noticed that before. Like Rain, I had seen the mark as something that belonged to someone else, superimposed onto my skin. It wasn't until right now, looking at it through the lens of Rain's, that I considered the differences. The way the wings across my chest were a little smaller, more delicate than Vincent's, following the shape of my clavicle. The way the smoke speared down between my breasts, following the lines of my body and mine alone. I never thought it looked right on me, I admitted. Like it was a costume, something that never should have been given to me.
I think it suits you perfectly.
His touch trailed down, down between my breasts, feather light over the sensitive skin.
You said it yourself. Your title, Queen. This mark belongs to you.
His lips curled.
Your skin. Your body. Your mark.
Somehow it didn't sound like a platitude when Rain said it. It sounded like the truth. His gaze lifted, those deep red eyes piercing mine. His touch stalled, lingering on my chest.
Did you mean it?
He said.
What you told Jasmine.
He didn't need to specify what he was talking about. When we reclaim our kingdom, I intend to rule beside him as such. I felt, all at once, much more naked than I had 30 seconds ago. I'm not going to risk my life and the lives of what little army I have left just to put your ass back on that throne without taking some of it for myself, I said. Somehow I could tell he knew my dismissive tone was a little forced. He rasped a low laugh.
Good, he said. I'd be disappointed otherwise.
It has nothing to do with you, I said, before I could stop myself. An infuriating, stubborn smile clung to his mouth.
Mm-hmm, of course not.
I'm still not sure that you're not going to fuck me over, I grumbled, just because I felt like it was what I should say, even if the truth of it was now obvious, even to me. But his thumb came to my chin, gently tipping my face back to him. His stare was steady, uncomfortably direct.
I am not going to fuck you over, he said.
Firmly, like it was nothing more and nothing less than fact. It felt like fact when he said it like that. And the truth was, I believed him. I didn't want to give him that satisfaction, though, so I narrowed my eyes. Again, you mean, I said. Fuck me over again. His lips twitched.
That face. There she is.
Then the smirk faded, revealing something so much more serious, something I wanted to wriggle away from. I didn't, though. I met his stare, let his thumb hold my chin. It was frightening to give someone your trust. More frightening still to give it for a second time after they broke it the first. One honest thing, I murmured. And he didn't hesitate, as he said softly,
Never, Aurea. Never again. And not just because I don't have a chance in hell of taking Sivrinaj back without you, but because I wouldn't want to anyway.
I thought of what was ahead. Two armies that hated each other, now forced to work together to take on a greater evil. For a moment, I couldn't help but consider what myself from a year ago would say if presented with all of this. She would fucking laugh. No, she would refuse to believe it altogether. That version of Aurea, literally, would not be able to comprehend any of it. Not Vincent's death, or his lies. Not the air mark on her skin, or her wish to a goddess, or the idea of allying with the Rishon heir. She certainly would never believe that I could be standing here now, naked, in front of Rain. Not only a vampire, not only a Rishon, but her greatest enemy. And not feel even a little bit afraid. At least, not afraid for her physical safety. Another fear settled, though, deep under my skin. "Do you really think we can do this?" I murmured. He contemplated this.
"Yes," he said finally. "Yes, I do."
He traced my air mark again, a line of concentration between his brows.
"At the very least," he said, "I sure as hell believe that you can."
I wanted to laugh at him. I wanted to weep. Because I knew he meant it. My fingertips touched his chest. Damp skin, rough with various little scars and the soft texture of dark hair. Right over his heart, where my blade had pierced that night. Funny how things change. He tipped my chin up. And I didn't have time to move or react before he kissed me, slow and deep, his soft tongue gently caressing mine as my lips parted for him like leaves opening toward the sun. It was the kind of kiss that made doubts wither, the kind that made it easy not to think about difficult realities, even if it hinted at a more frightening one that I hadn't yet accepted. Our mouths parted, but our noses still touched as he murmured,
"Been wanting to do that constantly for the last week."
Goddess. Me too. I wasn't sure what had changed the night we were together, but it was like my body had awakened to a whole new sense. It was a little shameful, actually, how I craved him. I was constantly aware of his proximity, his scent, his gaze. I could feel it when he looked at me, even when I didn't meet his eyes. And every time we had lain beside each other in our sparse, very much non-private moments of rest, I had to stop myself from closing the distance between us. It was dizzying. It was terrifying. It was addictive. I hated it. Fucking hated it. But maybe also liked, just a little bit, that he felt it too. I could practically sense his heartbeat, slow but quickening, hot beneath his skin, and I could very literally sense his cock hardening in the space between us, nudging my hip. I took a certain satisfaction in the fact that his desire was so much more physically obvious than mine. I could pretend my peaked breasts were from the cooling water on my skin. Could pretend my own quickening heart was from the anticipation of what we were about to do. Yet something about his shaky breath over my lips told me he knew the truth, too. I moved a little closer, hardened nipples brushing the hair of his chest. "That wasn't what you were really thinking about." His lips curled. I could taste that smile as he kissed me again, this time softer, nipping at my lip.
"One of the things," he admitted. "Not all of them."
His hand lowered to my breast, his thumbs circling the peak. It responded to him immediately, tightening beneath his touch, my breath hitching.
"Don't think I'm the only one," he murmured.
Another kiss. "You're arrogant," I said. Even as I was chasing his lips again, chasing that kiss like an addict, practically grinding myself against him. Pathetic. But I didn't feel ashamed.
"A little,"
he replied before cupping my face and kissing me again, this time harder, more viciously, something much more akin to the storms of our other torrential trysts. And I let it sweep me away. My desire devouring my pride as his arms folded around me and mine encircled his neck, pulling myself flush against him. The nagging need that I'd been managing to ignore for the past week was suddenly all-consuming, utterly devastating. And hell if I even cared. It was better to be lost in this than to be lost in all our difficult concerns. His hands glided over wet skin, like he was eager to refamiliarize himself with my body. My thighs parted, the warm water agonizing against my growing need, and my legs folded around his waist. He cradled me, lifting me up, making it easier for me to cling to him. His head craned, allowing me to control our kisses, fervent and unbroken. My slit met the rigid length of him, and I let out a little strangled sound against his mouth. "Fuck, Aurea," he breathed, the words butchered as my back met stone. I needed him. Goddess, I needed him now. No more waiting. But he paused, pulling back slightly, eyes meeting mine. "This all right?" he said in panting breaths. At first, I wasn't even sure what he was asking. Then I realized I was pinned here, between his body and the rocks. Every other time we'd been together, he had been so careful to make sure he never trapped me. Make sure I always was free to get away if I wanted to. Not long ago, the idea of ever having sex with anyone again in a position where I couldn't extract myself immediately was inconceivable. And yet here I was, not even noticing that he'd trapped me, with a rapid heartbeat that had nothing at all to do with fear. I reached around his body, dragging my fingernails down his back, lingering at the delicate flesh and soft feathers where his wings met his skin. It was a guess, really, as to whether he felt those nerve endings the way that I did. But his entire body reacted to that touch. His breath shuddered. His wings, those majestic wings, shivered, unfolding slightly, big enough to cocoon us both in a sheet of black red. His cock twitched, hips pushing a little against me in a movement that seemed totally involuntary. I smirked. I know I'm still in control. His eyebrows quirked. "No objections," he murmured, and kissed me again. Just as I tilted my hips, opened my thighs, and he sank into me. Goddess fucking help me. He hit so deep from that angle, that very first thrust setting my body alight like a match. I didn't realize I'd made a sound until his mouth covered mine and he whispered, "Careful, others are close." Oh, I heard that taunt in his voice, saying that just as he swirled his hips, grinding against my clit. I bit down on my moan and choked out, "Then you'll have to be so quiet, won't you?" I dragged my fingers down his back again, giving him the same challenge he gave me and relishing the slight growl that came from low in his throat. He didn't have a retort for me. I had unleashed him, just as I'd wanted, just as I needed. All that pent-up tension from the battle and the travel and a week spent in agonizing, untouchable proximity burst free. He kissed me hard, viciously, as his strokes took me, seizing full advantage of the control he had in this position, unrelenting, fast, deep. This wouldn't last long. Not for me. Not for him. That was fine. We were too impatient for that. Who knew how long we had left to live? We would burn ourselves hot and quick. And mother, I loved it. My skin was so warm, the pleasure so intense, I thought I might die here in it. And goddess, what a fucking way to go. Moans and screams and pleas and curses bubbled up in my throat, driven closer to the surface with every one of his thrusts. I needed more, needed release. I tilted my hips to urge him deeper, though there was nothing I could do but take him. And I did gladly, openly, clinging to him and clawing at his back for support. His mouth broke from mine, moving to my ear. "This," he rasped, breath hot and ragged. "This is what I was thinking about, Aurea. I missed you. I missed you." Strange how much those words hit me, how much I understood them, even if I couldn't bring myself to say them back. I missed you. A week without touching him, and I missed him. Months without his friendship, and I missed him. It wasn't about a week. It wasn't even about sex. It was about everything before that. Repairing some chasm that had opened in our relationship. Finding, terrifyingly, how much we had mourned what had been lost in that gap. I had missed him too. But I couldn't voice it. And I was grateful that he didn't give me the chance to anyway, because his strokes were unrelenting, the pleasure building to a crescendo that was, goddess, it was so much that it almost hurt, and I tightened my legs around him, pulling him against me, forcing him to go up in flames with me. I buried my face against his shoulder when I climaxed, stifling my scream against his skin because I couldn't choke it down anymore. Distantly, with the crescendo of pleasure, I felt a brief stab of pain. Pain, as his teeth sank into the space between my neck and shoulder. Not feeding, stifling himself too. His groan instead ringing out in shudders across my flesh. In the wake of it, I felt weak and dizzy, and yet so very at peace. The water was warm. That was the first sensation that returned. All this pleasant warmth. Warmth of the water. Warmth of Rain's body surrounding me. Warmth everywhere. He kissed the mark he'd left on my shoulder.
Sorry.
I think I scratched up your back. A breathy chuckle.
Good.
That's how I felt, too. Good. Let us leave something on each other's corpses. He drew back enough to look at me, tracing my face. He had little beads of water in his lashes, which glittered as his eyes crinkled in an almost smile. It occurred to me that this might be the only time I got to be alone with Rain before we threw ourselves into a mission that would probably kill one or both of us. The thought made a lump of unspoken words rise in my throat. Instead, I kissed him. Hard enough that there was no use for words anyway. I felt him start to harden again within me, my thighs tightening around him. I whispered against his lips, "We might not get privacy again." Because the moment we left this bath, we would be leaders again. We would be reclaimers of a lost kingdom. We would need to think about the future. There would be no time for the present. I wasn't ready to leave. He smiled softly.
Probably not.
My hips rolled against him, breath hitching at the now rigid length inside me. God is fucking help me. How did he do that? Might as well take advantage, I murmured.
Just practical, he said,
swallowing the words in his next kiss, and that was the last we spoke.
Chapter 53. Rain. I was glad that Araya and I had made the most of our time alone because we didn't get any more of it after that. Everyone understood that time was of the essence. The faster we struck, the better our chances at seizing Sivrnage while Simon's hold over it was still shaky. Jasmine and Vale clearly hated each other, but they made surprisingly effective allies. Both understood what it was like to be the underdog, and both understood the mindset of the upper class. They emphatically believed that now was not the time to try something risky and sneaky. This was the time for a dramatic show of strength. The only language they insisted that Simon and those who followed him would understand. I hated having to speak that language. But I wasn't too obsessed with the moral high ground to not stoop to their level. No point in thinking about the chances. Araya and I had defeated worse odds before, 7 times, in fact, in 7 trials. How much harder could this possibly be? The answer, it turned out, was much harder. I was a good fighter, but before these last few months, I'd had virtually no experience in battles, not fighting them and certainly not leading them. Jasmine and Vale, however, excelled at the ruthless strategy of warfare. The moment Araya and I had given the commands, they leapt into action. Immediately, we were swept into a whirlwind of preparations, plans, maps, strategies, weapons, inventories, rosters of soldiers, and diagrams of loyal forces. Letters were sent, maps were drawn, tactics were plotted. We would prepare for a week and then we would march, the forces that Jasmine and Vale had summoned joining us along the way. We'd move quick, before Simon's army would have the time to head us off. It was a convenient incidental benefit that we wouldn't have time to doubt ourselves either. Hell, Araya and I had been throwing ourselves against impossible odds for close to a year now. Why stop now? And in a way, it was oddly invigorating. To do something that felt right and earned again. To do it beside Araya. It made a lot of things seem easier. Both of us were grateful for the distraction of work. Maybe we wanted to avoid thinking too hard about what might happen after the battle. about how the Rishon and Hiage and the other kingdoms and, hell, even Nyaxia herself might react to the prospect of the Rishon and Hiage heirs ruling together. It sounded ridiculous. I know everyone thought it was. Strangely enough, only Vale seemed to take the alliance's settled law. Everyone else tiptoed around it, accepting it but not hiding their skepticism. Even Keturah pulled me aside at one point, asking, ever blunt, "Do you really think she's not going to bury a blade in your back the minute she has that throne?" Maybe I was a fool for it, but no, I didn't. Araya had passed up so many opportunities to kill me. If she was going to do it, she'd have done it by now. And if she did, fuck. Maybe I deserved it. That would be a problem for future Rain. Present Rain had more than enough to deal with. Everyone wanted to talk to us. Everyone needed something. The one person I tried hardest to pin down, though, was the one person who was the best at evading me. I finally caught her near dawn one day as she was crawling back to her little tent. I flicked her on the back of the head through bronze curls. "You're coming for a walk with me." Misha turned around, startled. Her eyes went round in surprise, then scrunched in something resembling a wince. She winced when she saw me. Winced. I don't want any bullshit excuses, Misha. I pointed to the path ahead. Walk. With me. Now. Is that an order? Is that an attitude? You've been spending too much time with Araya. No smile at that. No returning joke. She just said nothing. Concern twisted in my stomach. I held out my hand to help her up. Let's go.
Don't you have work to do?
It can wait. I didn't move my hand, just stared at her. Misha and I had been friends for a very, very long time. She knew when there was no point arguing with me. She let out a sigh and took my hand.
Jessamine said there are demons out here, Misha said. We shouldn't go too far.
Misha and I wandered through the more secluded paths in the cliffs, out of earshot of the camps. It was dark here, though not so dark our eyesight couldn't make out what it needed to. Better yet, it was quiet. I'd missed quiet. Meanwhile, Misha seemed so uncomfortable she was practically trying to speedwalk through our stroll. I scoffed. As if I believe you're afraid of demons.
Why wouldn't I be afraid of demons?
I don't know, Mish. Maybe because you ran off and joined the Qajari like it was another day of the week? That sounded a lot more bitter than I intended it to. Thought I was at a point where I could joke about Misha's actions. Guess not. Maybe I wasn't the only one, because instead of giving me some kind of smart-ass retort, she buried her hands in her pockets and kept walking.
That was different, she muttered.
It took me a second too long to understand what she meant. I kept pace beside her, my eyes slipping down, to the scars visible where her sleeve rode up. My lips thinned, a wave of concern passing through me, and with it, frustration. Misha, I stopped and touched her shoulder. She stopped walking but seemed reluctant to look at me.
What?
What do you mean, what? I've put up with you every day for fucking decades. Enough.
Enough of what?
You've been avoiding me since—
I haven't been avoiding you.
Araya told me about the prince. Misha's mouth remained open for a moment, her half-spoken words dying on her lips before she closed it.
All right.
All right. This fucking girl, mother help me.
What?
She said.
You're angry. I know. It's a big political problem and—
I scoffed. Actually scoffed, because what the fuck else was I supposed to say?
I'm not mad about the prince. Well, obviously you're mad. So what the hell are you mad about?
Something is wrong with you and you won't tell me what it is. It was more direct than I should have been. Maybe I was worn down after months of trying to help someone who hadn't wanted to be helped. Between Misha and Araya, it was exhausting. She and I stared each other down, silent. Misha's eyes were big and stubborn. Most of the time, they looked pretty and doe-like, People often said that Misha's eyes were her prettiest feature, but they didn't see her pissed off. Then, they were downright terrifying. She wasn't quite there yet, but I could see the shadow of it, and that was bad enough. As if she should be giving me that look, when I was the one following her around getting snapped at for the great crime of worrying about her. And I was worried about her. Enough with the bullshit, I said, but the words came out soft, I supposed, as I meant them. Tell me what happened.
I thought Aurea told you already.
Aurea didn't tell me why you've been avoiding me for a week, I wanted to say. She didn't tell me why you were put in that apartment instead of in the dungeons. She didn't tell me why you look so broken. Aurea told me about a dead prince, I shot back. I don't give a fuck about that. I'm asking about you. Misha stopped walking, then turned around. The anger drained from her face, leaving behind something childlike and conflicted that reminded me so much of the way she had looked when I first found her, it made my chest physically hurt.
She didn't tell you?
Do I need to talk to Aurea now to find out what's going on inside that head of yours? Misha didn't answer. Instead, she leaned against the wall, sliding down it, and perched on a pile of rock, her head in her hands. The guilt was immediate. I sat down next to her, even though the rocks were so low to the ground that I ended up ridiculously curled up on myself. I peered at her face between tendrils of honey hair. Mish, I murmured.
It was him.
The three words came out in a single breath. So fast they ran together and it took a minute for me to untangle them. Him, I repeated. And she lifted her head. And she looked at me with those big eyes filled with rage and tears. And I just fucking knew. Every shred of my frustration fell away. Every single emotion, every thought, every sensation disappeared, save for the utter, all-consuming rage. Him, I said again. She nodded. The image of the Shadowborn Prince unfolded in my mind. The Shadowborn Prince, who I'd invited into my castle, I'd talked to him, laughed with him, fed him fucking delicacies. And then that memory was replaced by another one. Misha, as I had found her all those years ago, pale and thin and sun-scorched, vomit-crusted to her lips, left in the dirt like a discarded toy. When she was in the throes of her fever, she just kept saying over and over again, "What's happening? What's happening?" She had been so damned young, practically a child. And she had been so, so afraid. That had been a long time ago, but I never forgot it, not really. I still saw that version of her sometimes, even though I knew she'd hate it if she knew that. I saw it in the night of the Moon Palace attack. When I'd scraped her up off the floor among all that night fire, I saw it every time I glimpsed the burn scars on her arms. And I saw it now. And that man, that fucking monster, had done that to her. I had smiled at that prick.
I shouldn't have killed him,
Misha was saying, though I was so furious I barely heard her.
It was careless.
What the fuck do you mean you shouldn't have killed him? My fists were clenched so tight they shook. I probably looked ridiculous hunched over on this stupid little rock, shaking like a madman. I'd say I should have killed him, but I'm glad you got to be the one to do it. She averted her eyes, staring at the ground.
I just snapped.
Why didn't you tell me? The minute he walked through the door, Misha,
I didn't know, she said weakly. I didn't know who he was, not until I saw his face.
She shuddered.
I used to think a lot about what it would be like to meet him again. But I used to be afraid I wouldn't remember. It was all fuzzy. I was so sick.
I remembered that well. That first year after Misha had recovered, she'd had an intense paranoid fear that any man she met could have been the one who turned her. She didn't remember her maker's face or name, so in a cruel twist of fate, That meant he was everywhere. Every passing stranger on the street.
Well,
she laughed darkly. I knew it right away. I was quiet. It hurt, actually hurt, to think that Misha hadn't been spared that. I hated Nikolai, and what I hated most of all was the innate connection I'd had to him as the man who turned me. He made himself the center of my entire world, not only because my survival hinged solely on him, but also because he had literally created me. Some intrinsic bond, no, shackle, existed in that relationship for vampires. It made you feel small and dirty and ashamed. I hated that Misha knew what that was.
He knew me too, I think, she said. Well, not really. I don't think he remembered me, but he noticed me. Maybe he smelled himself on me.
And she had been up in that apartment. Given to him, probably, by either Simon or Septimus, who noticed his interest in her, who wanted to bribe him to stick around and witness their grand ascension to power. Maybe buy themselves an ally. I didn't even want to ask. Didn't want to make her relive the answer, but I had to. Mish. Did he?
No, she said quickly. No. Maybe he would have, but...
But he ended up with Misha's sword through his heart. Good. And yet it didn't feel like that much of a comfort. He'd already violated her in so many other ways. You should have told me, I said, the minute you knew. She gave me a skeptical glance, a little pitying.
You needed him, Rain.
It doesn't matter.
It does matter. You know it matters.
And let's say I had won his alliance. Then what were you going to do? What was your plan? Just stay in that castle with him for goddess knows how long and suffer through it? Misha sighed. Suddenly she looked so tired.
Maybe, she said. I don't know. He was important, Rain. I'm not a child. You're trying to do something big, and even though you won't give me shit about it, I know I pushed you into it.
She touched her chest, letting out a wry laugh.
And I'm supposed to get in the way of that now? Me? You sacrificed for this. You gave up Aurea, and I know what that meant to you. You gave up your life. I wasn't going to stand in the way.
You gave up Aurea. Those four words hit me in the chest like arrows, one after another, too quick to catch my breath. I had fucked up. Because Misha was right. I had sacrificed in the name of power. I thought my sacrifices were my own, but that wasn't true. Aurea had suffered the weight of them. Misha had suffered the weight of them. And now she thought, genuinely believed, that she was less important than that cause. It doesn't matter, I said softly. Alliances, war, politics, it doesn't matter, all right?
That's not let me talk,
I snapped. Don't you fucking dare regret it for a second, Mish. The House of Shadow wants to come for us, let them come. It will have been worth it. I meant it, even though I also didn't want to think about the consequences. At least we had some time before we had to deal with that. As far as the House of Shadow knew, their prince died in the care of Simon Vassaris, not me. We were trying to retake the throne quickly, whatever diplomatic issues this might cause. We could save that for the next war. Tomorrow's headache, not today's. And even tomorrow, I wouldn't be able to bring myself to be sorry. Besides, I said, maybe we'll all be dead by then and it won't matter. A smile twitched at the corner of her mouth. Have you seen what this army looks like? Seems like a probably and not a maybe. I scoffed. And this from the optimistic one. She laughed. It was weak, but it was a laugh. I'd take it.
Sorry, I'm tired.
Tired. Long-term tired. I understood right away what she meant. She stared off into the darkness of the tunnels. If I listened carefully, I could still hear the sounds of the camp far in the distance, echoing down the hall. A constant reminder, even out here, of what was coming. I watched her profile, so uncharacteristically mournful. I'm sorry, Misha, I said quietly. She started to shake her head, but I said it again. I'm sorry for all of it. I'm sorry that it happened to you. I'm sorry that I couldn't stop it. I'm sorry you had to fight this alone. I'm sorry that I didn't get to help you kill that fucking bastard. I'm sorry you felt like you couldn't tell me. I'm sorry I made you feel like it wouldn't matter if you did. Her face softened. It's all right. No, it isn't. But it will be. I paused, then added, maybe, if we're lucky. She laughed softly, then laid her head against my shoulder.
I think we're lucky, she murmured.
I wasn't convinced, but I sure as fuck hoped so. I had a million things to do, but I wasn't ready to go. We remained there, in silence, for a few minutes longer.
Chapter 54. Araya. The days and nights blended together in a messy blur of preparations. We worked and slept and ate and worked. The caves grew more crowded as Vale and Jasmine collected the soldiers they had available in the north. In what felt like a miracle, we only ended up with 4 dead from fights between the Hiage and the Rishon. I was amazed the body count was that low. Though we did, apparently, have a few gouged out eyes and ripped off ears, too. Still, compared to the bloodbath we were expecting, it was practically camaraderie. We moved out fast. Rain and I had made the trip north very quickly, but it would take us a little longer to move with this many people. Jasmine and Vale had also set up a rendezvous point outside of Sivrenage, so that the troops summoned from the farthest reaches of the House of Night could move directly toward the city. Vale had some Rishon friends who had significant fleets too, from their lands on the western shores of the House of Night, who would be circling the Ivory Seas to flank us from the ocean. Would it be enough? This was the question on all our minds, unspoken, as we gathered our troops and set out across the deserts. We moved shockingly fast for such a large group of people. The wings helped, but what helped more was the sense of urgency in the air. The Hiage were ready to finally reclaim their throne, even if they had to do it alongside the Rishon. And the Rishon were just as eager to get the Bloodborne out of this kingdom. They actually cared about this. That didn't really hit me until we were halfway across the desert. It was nearly sunrise. We'd have to stop soon. Jasmine said as much to the rest of us, flying as we headed up the group, and Vale had remarked, "They aren't ready." I glanced behind me at the warriors who followed, flying in swift, neat formation, Rishon on one side, Hiage on the other. Despite the hours of travel, despite the sky tinted the dim pink of near sunrise, Vale was right. They weren't ready to stop. One look at them, and I could see it in their faces. Driven determination. It actually startled me. I'd never expected more from them than resigned loyalty. Never thought that they could give me, a half-human, more than that. Let alone when asked to walk beside an enemy they'd fought for thousands of years. And yet, my eyes flicked to Rain's, and I saw the same amazement, same disbelief in his face. "It's cloudy," he said. "We can keep going for a little longer. If they don't want to stop yet, who the hell am I to complain?" He dipped a little closer to me after that, just close enough for the tip of his wing to nudge mine, the feathers tickling, as if to silently say, "Well, would you look at that?" We squeezed out maybe an extra half hour of travel that morning. Nothing significant. And yet when we did finally settle down in our shelters, I couldn't help marveling at how far we'd come. I still wasn't sure if it would be enough. But Goddess, it was something, wasn't it?
I had never looked at the silhouette of Sivrinage from this far away before. I'd memorized that skyline from my bedroom window over the years, every spire or dome, every path the sun took over the sky above it. I seared that shape into my soul. I could have drawn it from memory. But perspective did change things. From out here in the deserts, the smooth silver waves of the dunes rolled in the foreground instead of the distance. The harsh blocks of the slums framed the city in squares of washed-out, dusty gray. The Moon Palace stood to the east, looming over the skyline, deceptively peaceful for a place that had, not long ago, claimed so much blood. And then the castle, my home, my prison, my target, loomed far ahead, distance reducing it to the smallest of them all. The castle was not the tallest building in Sivrinage, but it had always felt like it to me, larger than anything in life could be. From out here, it was just another building. Tonight, we would march for that city. We were ready. Vale and Jasmine's troops had met us here. Our army had tripled in size since we'd left the cliffs. This stretch of desert had now been transformed into a sea of tents and makeshift shelters to hide from the strongest hours of sun. We were ready, I told myself. We had to be ready.
You should be getting some rest, a familiar voice said behind me. I hear it's a big night.
I peered over my shoulder to see rain peeking through the flap of my tent. I put my fingers to my lips.
You'll wake Misha.
No one got their own tent. We'd rather spend our energy carrying weapons than supplies. That meant the warriors, us included, were packed three or four to a tent for the hours we were forced to rest. Rain and I spent that time wedged in with Misha and Keturah, trying to sleep while also dodging Misha's flailing limbs. Rain slipped from the tent, closing the flap behind him. When my eyebrows jumped, he raised his hands.
Relax, I'm in the shade.
He was, kind of. The tent blocked the strongest of the light, and it was a hazy day today. The shadows were long now, sunset approaching. Still seemed like an unnecessary risk. But then again, I also knew there was no point trying to tell Rain to avoid the sun. I scooted backward so I was sitting beside him. He squinted out over the horizon, taking in the same view of Sivrinage that I'd just been admiring.
Looks small from out here, he murmured. I nodded. The first time I saw Sivrinage, he said, it was when I was dragging myself out of the ocean. I thought I'd crossed into another world. Even the biggest cities I'd been to were nothing like this. I thought, thank the fucking gods I'm saved.
I shuddered a little. Rain, of course, had not been saved. He'd been walking into his own prison. It was hard to imagine that version of him. The sailor from nowhere who had never seen anything as grand as Sivrinage's castle. Just a broken, frightened human man who didn't want to die. I could remember so clearly the way Rain's voice had cracked when he'd told me this story the first time.
He asked me if I wanted to live,
he had told me.
What the hell kind of a question was that? Of course I wanted to live.
Do you wish you'd said no? I murmured. I didn't even need to specify what I was talking about. He took a long time to respond.
I cursed myself for that answer, he said at last, for a long, long time. Death would have been better than those next 70 years. But maybe there's something to be said for the years that came after that.
His eyes flicked to me, crinkling slightly with an almost smile.
Maybe even the years that come after this one.
The corner of my mouth twitched, his brow flattened.
What's that face for?
Nothing, it's just a very optimistic thing for you to say. He threw his hands up.
Well, fuck, if we can't be even a little optimistic, what are we doing any of this for?
It was, I had to admit, a fair point. So you think we can do this, I said, my gaze slipping back to the city. Tomorrow. Optimism wasn't exactly what I got from his long silence.
We'd better,
he said. It's just quiet, I said. It's
unnerving.
Yes, unnaturally quiet, even for the daytime. I would have expected to see more activity visible in Sivrnaj. More barricades, maybe? Or more troops stationed beyond the boundaries of the city. But even when we had arrived here, at dawn, it had been still.
They're bracing for us, Jasmine had said. They don't have enough men. They need to use what they can to keep the inner city safe, not run out and meet us out here, leaving their other sides exposed.
Logically, that made sense. Vale had agreed. Still, something about it made the hairs stand up on the back of my neck.
You'd better not be going soft on me, princess,
Rain said, nudging my shoulder.
What? You're scared? You? The steel-nerved Hiage queen?
I glared at him and he chuckled.
That's better.
I'm not scared, I'm just... I looked back at the city, then at him, then at the city. All right, maybe I was scared. I settled on, I feel the way I felt before the last trial. Not afraid, exactly. Not afraid for myself, at least. I wasn't afraid of a sword through my own gut. But I was afraid of letting my kingdom fall. I was afraid of all I could lose. I glanced back to Rain, his face now serious as he gazed out over the skyline, pink sunset light outlining his profile. And suddenly, that fear cut even deeper. His eyes flicked to mine, and I saw that fear reflected back at me, like a mirror to my own. It stirred a complicated knot of emotions in my stomach, words that I didn't know how to untangle. He swept a stray strand of hair behind my ear.
I always admired that about you, he said. That you fought, even when you were afraid. Don't you dare stop now, no matter what happens.
I gave him a wry smile. You said that then, too.
Don't you dare stop fighting, princess. It would break my damned heart. I remember. And it did break my heart when you stopped.
I didn't know what to say to that. I settled on, well, at least we're fighting now. A faint laugh.
We sure fucking are.
It will be enough. I hoped it didn't sound like I was reassuring myself, even though I was. A show of strength. That's all they respond to. Without meaning to, I touched my mark.
They will never respect you unless they fear you, little serpent,
Vincent whispered in my ear.
Show them something to be afraid of.
It had been a while since I'd heard his voice, even in my head. The sound of it left me a bit off balance. As if he'd seen it, because of course he'd seen it, Rain's hand lingered at my lower back, a steadying touch.
They won't stand a chance, he said.
But did I imagine that he, too, sounded uncertain? I turned a little, intending to face him, but the movement just pressed me against his arm. I ended up leaning against his shoulder, laying my head on it. It was just nice to soak up these last few minutes of private companionship. It was different than having sex with him. Different even than sleeping beside him. It was somehow more intimate. His arm folded around me. His face tilted, and when he spoke, I could feel his breath on my forehead.
Just want you to know, Aurea,
he murmured,
that you were the best part of it. The best part of all of it.
My chest clenched, violently. So sudden and sharp it felt like the aftermath of a blow. The earnestness of what he'd just said cut me open. But worse still was how much it sounded like a goodbye. I said, voice tighter than I intended, you accuse me of going soft when you're spewing that sappy bullshit. He laughed and I scowled, but I still didn't move, settling more comfortably against his body. And when his hand moved down to mine, I threaded my fingers through his like it was the most natural thing in the world. I wasn't sure how long we stayed like that, just watching the minutes tick by until the end of it all. Chapter 55. Aurea. The minute the sun set, Jasmine roused the warriors. The bloodthirsty excitement of the night before was gone. Now the soldiers were efficient, focused, a set of well-oiled gears grinding to life for one purpose alone. Warriors silently donned their weapons and armor, all ready and waiting. We didn't have much time to strike. Every second counted. The summoners had been preparing their sigils the entire journey, calling nightborn demons the moment the sun disappeared beneath the horizon. Now I understood how Jasmine had used so many demons in her attack on the armory, what felt like a lifetime ago. She, wisely, had recruited many summoners to her army. Smart, because demons were far more expendable than people, especially in an army this woefully undermanned. I was grateful for the beasts now, disgusting as they were. We needed the bodies, and while demons weren't as smart as vampires, they were certainly just as vicious. We didn't bother breaking down our tents, leaving them discarded in the sands, an eerily abandoned